Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. I hope you're having a great day. You know, there's so much to enjoy and be grateful for in life, and the way we approach each day can and does affect our mood, decision-making, and courage in pursuing our purpose in life. And that's why we all need a little positive perspective to get our day started. And that's why I listen to podcasts. And I hope the reason you listen to this podcast, Open Your Eyes. Don't ever doubt the power of setting our mind right each day. It has a lasting impact. So I hope today you hear something that can help you get a better view of your place in the world and how you can live to your potential. And when you're done listening, if you find this podcast worthwhile, be sure to share it with a friend. It just may be what they need in their life today. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about you and the reason you are where you are, the reason you were born, and how we can find that reason, that purpose. Because when we do, we find how to really be happy. The Golden Gate Bridge is one of the most famous in North America. It spans a distance of 1.7 miles. It stands 750 feet at its tallest point, and the roadway at high tide is 220 feet above the water. And as such, it's the most used suicide destination in North America. Kevin Briggs is a California Highway Patrol officer that is assigned to the bridge. He loves the sounds of the bridge, the metal creaking against the wind, traffic, horns from the big trucks headed into the city, cargo ships passing beneath, birds squawking above, and in a rare quiet moment, you can hear the sea lions barking on the cement footings below. Kevin enforces traffic laws, but at other times, he's all that stands between life and death for many people. On a brisk March day, depressed and in debt, another Kevin came to the bridge. Kevin Berthia was depressed, no job, in debt, and his daughter had just been born premature. He was given a bill for $250,000 in medical costs. His plan? To climb over the rail and put his back to the open air and just let go. Well, Officer Briggs noticed Kevin standing on the wrong side of the railing on the bridge. Too many people passing by, Kevin may have seemed like just another person, but Briggs, a California Highway Patrol sergeant, had been here before. He knew the signs. He'd spent years patrolling the bridge. Now, his job is not to force, but to listen and share. So he approached slowly, carefully, knowing that words carry weight, especially when someone's holding on by a thread. He gently asked the man his name. It was Kevin, too, Kevin Berthia. And not too far into the conversation, he asked his most pertinent and impactful question. It's supposed to be nice weather tomorrow. What are you doing tomorrow? Why is that most impactful? Well, Officer Briggs says most people haven't thought about that question. When he uses the word tomorrow, it causes them to think differently, to construct a different thought pattern. The thought of tomorrow changes everything. Briggs didn't try to preach, persuade, or panic. He just listened. For 92 minutes, Kevin listened to and asked questions of the other Kevin. Kevin Berthia came to the bridge isolated, rejected, and unworthy. But after nearly an hour and a half of simply being heard, Kevin Berthia did something unexpected. He climbed back over the rail. He left validated with a newly constructed reality. Officer Briggs pulled him back to life. And it would take several years, but Kevin and Kevin would become fast friends. And now both are working together to help those in similar situations. They work together in using words to create new worlds for those in need. To date, Kevin Briggs is credited with preventing more than 200 suicide attempts. He says, "I was just doing my job." Now, many people who know Officer Briggs would say he was born for a reason. He has the talent and the heart and the mission to help others, and he is uniquely equipped to do so. The bridge has been his place of purpose. When Anthony Robles was born in Arizona in 1988, he weighed just 3 pounds and was missing his right leg all the way up to his hip. Doctors never gave a clear explanation why. And Anthony's childhood wasn't easy, but from an early age, people quietly assumed he would have a limited life. He was fitted for a prosthetic leg, but hated how it felt. So by the time he was in grade school, he decided just to go without it. When he was in the sixth grade, he set a record for the most push-ups by a student. Now, most people might have avoided sports altogether, but Anthony didn't want pity. He wanted to compete. So at age 14, he signed up for wrestling. At first, he lost a lot. People whispered, coaches questioned if it was safe. Anthony kept showing up, though. By his junior year in high school, he went undefeated. He trained obsessively, developing a brutal upper body strength to compensate for the missing leg. His style was unconventional. He was hard to defend, but it was effective. And he went on to win the Arizona State title. Then, despite being overlooked by most top college programs, he walked on at Arizona State University. In 2011, as a senior, Anthony Robles won the NCAA Wrestling Championship, undefeated that season. The crowd gave him a standing ovation that lasted for minutes, but his response was quiet. He said, "I don't think I was born with a disadvantage. I think I was born for a reason." What about you? Like Officer Briggs and Anthony Robles, were you born for a reason? And if so, what is that reason? You know, sometimes the answer to that question is, well, I'm not sure, and I don't know if there's a single reason that I'm here, and that's okay. You don't need perfect conditions or a perfect past to be born for a reason. You need a willingness to see where you are and the courage to believe that even from humble beginnings, you have a reason for being in the circumstances you're in today, and you have a purpose there. You know, before architects design any new building, they first ask, what will be its purpose and how will it be used? The intended function always determines the form of the building. And before God created you, he decided what purpose he wanted you to fulfill on earth. He planned exactly how he wanted you to serve, and then he shaped you for these tasks. You are the way you are because you were born for a purpose. As a boy, growing up in rural Mississippi, Chef Jeff Henderson didn't imagine himself in a kitchen. He imagined himself with money, and by his teenage years, he found his way to it by selling drugs. By 19, he was making thousands of dollars a week. He had cars, clothes, and a crew. But it all caught up to him. At 24, he was arrested and sentenced to nearly a decade in federal prison. Now, here's where the story could have ended, where a young man's mistakes could have buried his future, but something unexpected happened to him behind bars. One day, while working in the prison kitchen, Jeff was handed a cookbook and asked to prep ingredients, but there was a problem. He couldn't read. He'd hidden it for years, memorizing, guessing, bluffing. But now, standing in a hot kitchen, he realized if he ever wanted more from life, he'd have to start reading. So he learned. He studied. He read every cookbook he could get. He watched Food Network episodes with religious focus. And by the time he left prison, he had taught himself to cook and to read. He started washing dishes at a restaurant, then chopping onions, then managing a line, and eventually Jeff became the first African-American executive chef at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. He's since published best-selling books, spoken across the country, and launched programs for at-risk youth. But ask him what made the difference, and he won't say talent. He says, "I realized my past didn't disqualify me from my purpose. It prepared me for it." Now, Jeff wasn't born to be a criminal. He wasn't even born to be a chef. He was born to turn his pain into something that could feed others literally and figuratively. His mistakes led him to the place in life where he could pursue his purpose. That's what it means to be born for a reason. Not that you'll avoid mistakes, but that you'll find beauty beyond them. That you'll take your story, however messy, and turn it into something that serves. In the scripture, God tells Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart and gave you a purpose. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." Now, some people believe, including me, that we were put here on this earth for a reason. Some to parent amazing kids, some to serve caringly for those in need, some to bring about a great contribution to society, and some to learn and grow in their own challenges. When Temple Grandin was a toddler in the 1950s, her parents were told she'd never live a normal life. She didn't speak. She threw tantrums. She was hypersensitive to sounds, textures, and touch. And doctors recommended institutionalization, but her mother refused. Temple was eventually diagnosed with autism, though at the time, understanding of the condition was minimal. She didn't speak her first words until she was four, and for years, she was bullied and misunderstood and isolated. She saw the world differently, quite literally. Where others saw chaos, she saw systems, and where others were overwhelmed by noise, she focused on the patterns. Her mind worked like a movie reel, vivid, visual, and exact. And one day, while visiting her aunt's ranch, she noticed something no one else had, that the cattle became calmer when placed in a narrow chute that gently applied pressure. It reminded her of how she felt safer when wrapped tightly in blankets. And that observation turned into an idea. And that idea turned into a revolution in animal welfare. Today, Dr. Temple Grandin is one of the most respected livestock facility designers in the world. Nearly half of all the cattle in North America are handled in systems that she created, systems that reduce fear and pain. She's also one of the most prominent advocates for neurodiversity, helping others with autism to find their voice and place. In a world that once saw her as broken, she became a builder. When asked why she thinks she was born the way she was, she says, "I think the world needs different kinds of minds to work together. My difference is my strength." Now, sometimes you and I get thinking that happiness is found being in what others are or doing what others have done to pursue happiness. And this doesn't always lead us to our purpose. Why? Because we're made to be unique and to walk our own path. Several years ago, a Japanese Buddhist teacher and a psychiatrist teamed up to write a book about something they were deeply passionate about. Entitled the book, "You Were Born for a Reason: The Real Purpose of Life." At the end of the book, they craft a gentle yet profound invitation. We were all born with intrinsic worth and the capacity to discover enduring happiness, not by accumulating more, but by awakening to a deeper reality that happiness comes in part by seeking your purpose and being content in the pursuit of it. They tell the story of Kyoko Iwasaki, who skyrocketed to fame by capturing the gold medal in the breaststroke swim. At the time, she was the youngest swimmer to ever win gold in an Olympic game in history. After her victory, she said, "This is the happiest thing in my whole life." At just 14 years of age, she believed she had found happiness. Naturally, the expectations were high for her to repeat the feat in the next Olympics, and the pressure was enormous. But now she was in school and trying to swim, but learning so much more about her life and herself. She was finding joy in school and pursuing her life's purpose. She told a reporter, "I wish I would have never said it was the happiest thing in my life because I'm learning what happiness really is." She was finding happiness in herself and her learning, and at the next Olympics, she placed 10th. But she was more happy than she had been when she won 4 years earlier. Now, as I reflect on my life, earning a PhD didn't make me more happy. The learning and experience I gained helped teach me how to be more happy, and the experience helped me see a bit more about my purpose in life, but the degree or the title means very little. I've also learned that to understand for what reason we are here, we need to become people that are trying to fulfill a purpose. When we live life, taking a chance that we may be where we are for a reason, and acting in that reason, we find out who we are and why we're here. In 2011, a 12-year-old girl named Emma Mogus from Oakville, Ontario, had a friend who was paralyzed from the neck down after a diving accident. He could no longer use a keyboard or a phone. Emma visited him often, and one day she noticed something small. He could still move his tongue. She went home that night and started sketching. Now, most 12-year-olds would have felt helpless, but Emma wondered, could the tongue do what the hands no longer could? Within a few months, she'd built a prototype, a hands-free keyboard made from household materials and repurposed electronics. She called it the Tongue Interface Communication Keyboard, or TIC. It allowed people with severe mobility impairments to type using only tongue movements, and her invention won awards at science fairs, and soon, rehabilitation centers were reaching out. Emma didn't care about the attention. "I just wanted my friend to talk again," she said. And she was born with a scientific mind, but she was also born with compassion. And that combination, applied to one friend's pain, led to something that now helps thousands. Emma didn't wait until she was older or more qualified. She simply noticed a need and believed that she might be the one to meet it. That's how purpose works. It often whispers, "Maybe I could do something." Now, sometimes the reason you were born becomes clearer when you care deeply enough to act, especially when no one else has. All of you know, like I do, the greatest swimmer of all times is Michael Phelps. Across 5 Olympic Games from 2000 to 2016, from Sydney to Athens, London to Beijing, and Rio, Phelps amassed an astonishing 28 Olympic medals, including a record-breaking 23 gold medals. Now, this haul places him far ahead of any other Olympic athlete, nearly 3 times that of his closest competitor, who earned no more than 8. If Phelps divided himself into 2, he would occupy first and second place among all Olympians since 1896. If Phelps divided into 3, he'd be the first, second, and fourth most decorated Olympian. On a typical training day, Phelps would complete 3 training sessions. And by the end of the day, he would log over 9 miles of sprinting and swimming. And almost every expert would agree that Phelps won so much because he trained so much. But it wasn't just the amount of training. Phelps knew he had to be excellent in every facet of the sport, so he went to the University of Michigan to be reunited with his coach, Bob Bowman. Now, Bowman was to coaching what General Patton was to war, the winningest in history. And in the space of 3 years, Bowman had racked up 50 All-American honors and 37 Big Ten titles. And Phelps agreed that he would follow with exactness every one of Bowman's instructions. By early fall, Bowman had him on a grueling daily training regimen, an intense trifecta of 2-hour swims. He had 3 daily sessions starting at 6 in the morning, followed by weightlifting, recovery ice baths, stretching, and massage. As Bowman assessed Phelps, he realized that Phelps was fast in the water, but slow out of the starting blocks. Phelps was usually the slowest into the pool after the gun sounded. The next problem was Phelps was so long and his hands and feet so big, and he didn't have the muscle strength to push his hands and feet through the water as fast as other swimmers. So Phelps started a serious weight training program. To get the needed protein and nutrition, he ate 3,000 calories per meal to maintain his 6'4" frame. For breakfast, he'd inhale 3 fried egg sandwiches with cheese, lettuce, tomatoes, fried onions, and mayonnaise. He'd then consume a 5-egg omelet, a bowl of grits, 3 slices of French toast, with powdered sugar and 3 chocolate chip pancakes. He devoured a pound of pasta and 2 large ham and cheese sandwiches on white bread with mayo for lunch. He drank about 1,000 calories worth of energy drinks a day. Then came the ab workouts to strengthen his core. One famous story is that Bowman pushed Phelps to the breaking point often during their training sessions. One day, Phelps yelled at his coach, "Forget that. You don't know how I feel." To which his coach replied, "I don't care how you feel. Do it anyway." When Phelps didn't win, they increased his workout intensity and duration. "I did 95% of what Bob asked me to do," Phelps says with a knowing smile reflecting on his coach's rigorous regime. Now, his life became a triathlon of eating like a titan, sleeping like a bear, and swimming like, well, Phelps. Then came the relentless pursuit of technique. In the butterfly stroke, Phelps' hands reached perfectly, fully extended over his head. His feet would whip like a dolphin on every stroke, lifting him perfectly out of the water. Phelps' underwater kicks off each turn were one of the main reasons he would take home 8 gold medals at the 2008 Olympics. 8 dolphin kicks off almost every one of the walls. Why? Well, dolphin kicks are faster than swimming on the surface. Swimming underwater has become so popular that it's now only legal to swim underwater for just 15 meters after diving in the pool or making a turn. Now, if you go back in kindergarten, Phelps had trouble with inattention. An exasperated teacher finally informed his mother, herself a teacher, "Your son will never be able to focus on anything." "That just hit my heart," says Debbie Phelps. "It made me want to prove everything wrong. I knew that if I collaborated with Michael, he could achieve anything he set his mind to, and Michael would learn from his mother. She helped him gain excellence and focus. In fact, according to professionals, children with ADHD can develop a common but confusing symptom, the ability to zero in intensely on an exciting project or activity for hours at a time. So his condition actually helped Michael. I went through ups and downs personally, publicly, and in the pool, Michael says, and he learned that mental health was just as important to excellence as physical health. And he soon adopted the mantra, it's okay not to be okay. At one point in his career, he said, I had no self-confidence, no self-love. I hated myself. I was at a place where I didn't want to be alive anymore. It took me a long time to look in the mirror and like who I saw. Well, Phelps, the most decorated Olympian of all time, seemed to have it all. 23 Olympic golds and global fame. Behind the scenes, though, he struggled with depression, anxiety, and identity loss. And after the 2012 Olympics, he nearly took his life. In rehab, he read The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. And that started a shift in his thinking. He realized his real calling wasn't just winning. It was using his story to help others feel less alone. He said, I found that winning gold medals wasn't my purpose. My purpose is helping people who struggle like I did. Now, it's interesting, isn't it? That like Michael, we can pursue and achieve things in life, but if we really want to be happy, we need to find our purpose in helping and giving of ourselves to others. In the book, Purpose-Driven Life, Rick Warren says, one day you will stand before God, and he will do an audit of your life, a final exam, and he will ask you, what did you do with what I gave you? What did you do with your life? All the gifts, talents, opportunities, energy, relationships, and resources that he gave you. Did you spend them on yourself, or did you use them for the purposes that God made you for? I think this is what changed Michael Phelps' view of life. When you live life with this view, you can't help but change. As the scripture says, we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Now, on a side note, one of the things I learned from Warren's book was about how we change. The lesson was this. Imagine riding in a speedboat on a lake with an automatic pilot set to go east. Now, if you decide to reverse and head west, you have two possible ways to change the boat's direction. One way is to grab the steering wheel and physically force it to head in the opposite direction from where the autopilot is programming you to go. By sheer willpower, you could overcome the autopilot, but you would feel constant resistance. Your arms would eventually tire of the stress, and you'd let go of the steering wheel, and the boat would instantly head back east the way it was eternally programmed. This is what happens when you try to change your life with willpower. You say, I'll force myself to eat less or exercise more or quit being disorganized and late. Yes, willpower can produce short-term change, but it creates constant internal stress because you haven't dealt with the root cause. The change doesn't feel natural. So eventually you give up, go off your diet, and quit exercising. You quickly revert to your old patterns. But there is a better and easier way. Change your autopilot, the way you think. The Bible says, let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Your first step is to start changing that. Change always starts first in your mind. The way you think determines the way you feel, and the way you feel influences the way you act. Now, I have found this to be true. We can't be what we can't see. We have to open our eyes and change the way we think if we want to change our actions. And it takes a change in view and thinking to really make lasting change in our life. So, maybe today and this week, you can consider your purpose and start looking, living, and thriving in a purpose-driven life. And watch. You will have more purpose. You'll be born for a reason and have more fun and happiness in your life. Most of all, thanks for joining us today. And don't forget to join us next week for another podcast as we seek to open our eyes to who and what we can become.